Welcome to The Sync Report, the intersection between filmmakers, content creators, and musicians, where we host a weekly conversation with some of the biggest names in film, television, music, and entertainment. Meet industry experts and top-level musicians as we pull the curtain back on music placement and scores, building vital relationships and providing real opportunities for our listeners. Listen to indie filmmakers and content creators present their latest productions and describe specific scenes as they consider music submitted by our audience. Hosted by film star and musician Colin O'Donoghue and his co-host, the godmother of independent films, Rose Ganguza, and The Sync Report's creator and music supervisor, Jason P. Rothberg. Don't forget, tell your friends about us and remember to rate, comment and subscribe to The Sync Report on Apple and across all platforms. Music is the difference between a good film and a great one.
Welcome to The Sync Report.
Thank you, Milfredo and Willow, for that lovely introduction, and welcome to The Sync Report. Okay, well, let's find out who we've flown in on our show today. Let's welcome our producer, Paula Flack. Paula, how are you? How are things?
I'm good, thanks, Colin. How are you?
I'm good. Enjoying
busy week?
Thursday. Yeah, pretty busy.
Dressed
what
up
about
as
you?
A pirate at all this week?
I have not dressed up as a pirate this week. No,
just
not
checking.
Yet. What about you? Have you dressed up as a pirate?
Not a pirate, no. Maybe some other things.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Sorry, I'm feeling very comedic today, clearly.
Good. So, Paula, who have we got on the show this week?
Okay, this week, Colin, we have Mark Downing on the show. Mark started his career in music as a musician, playing in his first band while still at school, then moving on to other bands playing across Ireland. Then, 26 years ago, he set up AMA Music Agency, Audio Networks, i.e. Podcast and Talent Agency, and has since then been representing original bands, covers bands, specialist DJs, performers, comedians, and special entertainment acts for festivals, music venues, and corporate events worldwide. Some of his current tours include Gilbert O'Sullivan, who's on tour in America and Japan, and Blind Boy, who you may know from the movie Trainspotting 2, going on tour in Spain and the UK. But now, like The Sync Report, Mark is also exploring the world of NFTs. Please help me welcome Mark Downing.
Welcome, Mark. Welcome to The Sync Report. It's great to have you here.
Thank you very much, guys. And I'm glad to be with you all.
Well, look, it's great to have you. It's great to have you. And it's great to have a fellow Irishman on the show tonight. So, Mark, I'll get going. Yeah, you were born in Dublin, so I'm not too far from you. I'm from Drogheda. What was
brilliant.
It like growing up in Dublin, where music is such a big part of you know, everyday culture? Obviously, you know, music plays such a big role in Irish culture in general. So what was that like in Dublin, and what kind of music were you listening to at home, or, you know, in the pubs around you, or in the streets, or whatever, you know?
Yeah, I grew up in a town called Dunleary, just beside of Cabinteely, and it was we grew up in, it's kind of like a lot of music heads come from there, and poets. It's out by the sea, you probably know it well. But in the 80s, it was a kind of a rough period as well, you know? There was massive unemployment, and it was a very hard kind of city to grow up in. Musically, we grew up with all different styles, because you were kind of almost, you know, when you were growing up in the 80s, you were, you know, it was the end of the punk period. But then you had, like, ska, and then you had mods, and you had the rockers. So it was a whole period of great music, and there was an evolution of amazing Irish music during that time, because then you had the likes of Gary Moore and Phil Lynott had travelled across to England and the States to make their claim, and Thin Lizzy became one of the biggest rock bands in the world. And, you know, we grew up listening to stuff like Stiff Little Fingers, who were singing about what was happening up in the Northern Ireland, you know, with Alternative Ulster. And then you had bands like XTC. I grew up, my favorite, because I was a drummer, so I grew up listening a lot to The Police. You know, I was a massive Police fan. And again, you know, we grew up listening to stuff like, you know, The Specials and Madness and all, you know, Bob Marley, I think, must be in every Irish house at home, along with, you know, every Commitments album. And so that's what we all grew up with back in the day, you know. And then, of course, we all, you know, we all, probably not dissimilar to yourself, we all grew up in housing estates, you know, and everybody beside you, you either got a football or you got, you know, you either got a football or you got a music instrument. That's how it is in Ireland. So you either played ball or you sang or you performed in some way. And you only notice that, I think, when you leave the country, how much, because we always know somebody who can play and sing. And you only realize when you leave the country, you know, how valuable that is to carry with you abroad, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we actually have a clip of Black is the Colour by Christy Moore, which I'm very familiar with.
Love it.
And I think every single person, I don't even think you had to grow up in the 80s in Ireland for that to be. I think every kid since he wrote the song, or since he sang the song, knows it.
It's a staple.
Let's spin it. It's a staple for definite. Let's spin it, Milfredo.
For black is the colour of my true love's hair. Her lips are like some roses fair. She has the sweetest smile and the gentlest hands. And I love the ground whereon she stands.
So, Mark, this is Rose.
Hey, Rose.
What moment or experience led you to becoming a musician? I mean, drums are not the cheapest instrument to learn to play. So what or who influenced your decision to play drums?
I remember a really defining moment. I was we used to save up a bit of our pocket money and go into a bar on Parnell Street when we were about 14. And for $5, you used to be able to get the bus into town. You could go and see. Somebody brought me in to see a rock band, and you know, I stood up at the bar and ordered a beer. Try explaining that to somebody now. And basically, I walked into this club that was up on top of Parnell Street back in the day. I think it's still a rocker bar. Basically, there was this band playing with a drummer playing double bass, and they were setting off fireworks. And there was about 200 people inside the bar jumping around with pints flowing. I was just like, this is amazing. And I could see this guy playing a drum solo with double bass drums. And I just, my heart just like, you could feel just everybody was going crazy. And I was just like, this is total chaos. I love this. This is what I'm going to do. Basically, that was it. I was hooked at 14. And then I basically worked around painting houses till I could afford a drum.
Yeah.
And then I started from there playing with college bands.
With no formal training?
Absolutely none. Just rock and roll, the old school side. There was no bin colleges or nothing. It was like, get up on the stool, can you play? It was like, yeah, of course you can play. You know, like we call it blagging at home. You know, you just went for it. You sat behind and tried to play whatever you could play. I mean, at that stage, I hadn't even got a full drum kit, you know, but I would turn up anywhere and play for anybody. So I was playing. One minute I was playing with a rock band, the next thing I was playing with a heavy metal band, the next thing my maths teacher was going, can you do a trad session? I'll give you a case of beer. I'm like, yeah, okay, I'll turn up. So it was kind of, but from that, you learned how to play all different styles of music, you know, and you also learned how to play for beer.
That's amazing.
Is that, are your clients currently, are they happy with that offer, Mark? I'm sure. blind boys. Yeah, no problem. A case of beer, I'll show up.
I'm like an old horse sent out to pasture. You know, I'm retired from embarrassing myself anymore. So, I'm just an old punk at heart. You know, like I'm still waiting for the next Nirvana or Pearl Jam or you know, to come around. But yeah, I'm too old for that, man. Let the youngins do that one. You know,
the punkness stays in you for your whole life.
Oh yeah! Don't think that ever leaves, does it? You
Once
know,
a
like
punk, always a punk, Rose.
Yeah,
Have you checked out the Nova Twins, Mark?
No, I don't know them. Sorry,
check out the Nova Twins.
Yeah, cool. Thanks for the tip. I'm always looking for new music. Yeah,
two really badass black girls playing heavy bass punk.
Oh wow!
They're incredible.
Wow, cool.
They're coming to Dublin, actually, November, March 19th. If I'm there, we'll go together, Mark.
Yes, go. You must go. That's they played a charity gig for me 5 years ago when I charged £5 a ticket.
that is they say, rock and roll, you know? Brilliant. Yeah, yeah, that'd be cool. Actually, I was just watching, you know what I was watching last night? There was a great program all about the the history of like hip hop that came out from the States, you know, and how it all evolved. It was wonderful, you know, because they at the same time was almost like corresponding to what where punk was just a decade before that, you know. It's kind of interesting. So it was similar. I was kind of laughing about it, saying how different it is, because when we were growing up, you know, everything was defined by the music and the politics as well, which you don't really see anymore, you know, which is a bit of a pity. It's, that's the only thing I think is a bit remiss from music nowadays. I don't know whether you see it as much. I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you think you still see it as much?
I'm with you 100%. In fact, I was actually, I'm going to drop names now, with Geldof in Dublin not too long ago. And he was saying that. It's like, where's the voices? What, you know, where are the singers talking about anything of depth? You know, it's all about this great car or sex or drugs, but there's nothing with any depth or meaning. It's fake.
It's all bling and no ring.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
I think they're still there. I think I've seen a few bands that are still doing it, but they're just not being picked up by the labels because they're too dangerous.
If you go back to like the 60s the musicians were really poets, you know, I mean, in a way. And by the time you got to punk, I mean, it was a certain kind of poetry to it all.
Do you remember when the first time you saw Nirvana for that video? Like King's Spirit, and everybody was in like dressed in black and just this full mosh, and they were just going, where did that come from? Oh my god. You know, it was like, it'd be great to see something like that come out again. You know, I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
You know, any form of music, that form of hip hop would be great.
I think Paul is kind of right. I think there are bands out there all over the place, but it's so hard to find them now because, you know, it's not in the interest of labels to try and promote them in any kind of way. So you have to. It's not as easy. Yeah, it's
crazy.
Easy
actually. Milfredo's working on a podcast right now himself that, you know, it's like, you know, is rock and roll dead? And it's exactly about this whole point, you know, the labels in the 80s and 90s, if you were outlandish, if you said a comment, you got into a fight with another band, oh my God, the labels would send out press releases, you know, promoting that. Now they'll just drop you.
That was Malcolm McLaren's expertise with the Sex Pistols, wasn't it?
Brilliant.
You know, actually, there's a new artist coming out of Ireland at the moment called Strange Boy, who comes from Limerick, also the same town as Blind Boy, but he's putting together some really wonderful hip-hop lyrics with traditional Irish musicians. Really, really interesting music. Well worth checking out. It's a really good cutting... rock stuff going on. If you're in a rock, check out the Blizzards. And of course, if you're into amazing songs, Patty Casey is always incredible.
Oh, we just had Patty on. Oh my God. He actually gave us, he did a concert for us. Oh my God. That's going to be the best show.
Brilliant.
You know,
brilliant. Yeah.
This is Kevin. There is a group, and it's one of the most lauded groups over the past 2 years called Salt. And they're a UK group. And
they are amazing.
There you go. And so they're all about social commentary. And the big thing about them is they're a lot of pretty big musicians that came together to do this record or do records under the radar without the record labels. And so, you know,
of
so many lists in terms of, you know, the best albums over the past 3 years. So there is something that's still happening. I just think it's not within the vein of the music that's out there in the general public.
It'd be great to see a new platform turn up with that that just plays that kind of music, wouldn't it? It'd be great to see something like that go back out again, you know? There you go. Maybe there's a tip, Jay, for your next one.
Hey, honestly, I think with what's going on in the world right now, I think we're going to start to hear a lot of voices singing out about how they feel about what's going on.
Yeah.
All right. Let's Colin, bring us out of this pressing moment. Let's get back to Mark's history.
Well, Mark. Let's get back to your first band. Your
Turnball
first band was called
Blue.
Turnball Blue School Band. So
what a crap name.
How long were you guys together? How long did you play together?
I suppose we played for about 2 or 3 years. I was about 14 at the time. to play. We were playing in a school band, but if you wanted to play in the college bands, back in the time in UCD, you had to pretend you were in college. So, but the singer that I used to play with went on to form a great band while we're checking out. They're based in Spain at the moment, called Track Dogs. So he went on to become a songwriter and a voiceover expert. But yeah, we had a bit of fun playing there. And then I went on to a biker band called the Hellfire Club. So we would have played, you know, for all the kind of Hell's Angels and the bikers around Ireland in their clubhouses. That was quite an interesting period.
And what kind of stuff were you playing with them?
Kind of hard rock, kind of Stooges kind of vibe.
Was that what you were listening to? Was that what you were listening to at home when you went gigging? Was that the type of music that you were into, or was it sort of more for the?
Yeah, it was a mixture of everything. You know, I was always into any music that was good and loud, and just, you know, if the song was good, I was into it, no matter where it was coming from, music wise, you know, or kind of genre wise. Just if the song was good, I'd try to work out a drum pattern, or because I was always trying to work out how the drummer played. Yeah. So.
And what kind of bands were you listening to?
Anything from Iggy Pop to The Police, Nirvana, Deus, Rage Against the Machine, yeah.
And you worked with Andy Summers, actually. You were Andy was signed to AMA there from The Police.
Yeah, we ended up working with Jason, just we were trying to do a couple of shows with Andy, which was an absolute experience and a pleasure. Totally. So, legend, and it was an honor to even connect with him, you know. And then I suppose just moving from the bands, then we went on to set up the agency, just because everybody used to ask us how we would book bands or find bands. And that's where we kind of led to, from being a musician to an agent, because basically you had to make a living and make ends meet. That's kind of where we ended up developing AMA.
Colin, do you notice like a common thread, before you play that clip, sorry, a common thread when we're having, you know, the Irish musicians and executives on, they're so industrious, you know, they really figure out a way to be able to fund their habit, you know, their hobby of being a musician. I just, you know, Patty's story and Mark, I find the Irish musicians so inspirational to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard, I think, to it's quite hard to make a living as a musician in Ireland.
Very hard,
you know what I mean? So I think that's, yeah, you kind of have to be industrious. I look back on when I was in bands, when I was in school and stuff like that, and yeah, it's kind of a crazy thing. But we have a clip of Zombie from the Cranberries, which
another Irish band.
You play into the types of music that you were into at the time. Spin it there, Manfredo. Amazing. What an incredible voice.
Yeah, really beautiful. So, Mark, you started booking bands around 26 years ago, and that's around the same time that the internet took off. So how do you think the timing of those two events impacted you getting your agency started? And how did you go from festivals and tours to more corporate gigs?
Great question. You know, when we were trying to do everything, as you know yourself, when the internet just started, you were trying to fax machines and do contracts, and you know, it was all very laborious and going to filing cabinets. And then all of a sudden, the internet broke, and we're like, "Oh my God, this could really blow up." And I think, but the wonderful thing about the internet, what it did was it allowed if you had an open mind to see it a little bit more forward, you know, ordinary people who didn't have a lot of money or young people who had an entrepreneurial chance to break out, had a chance to promote or to get themselves up in business and compete at the same level as everyone else with little or no money. All you had to do was work out how to, you know, get stuff online and get yourself a website. Because back in the day, advertising in Ireland was done through Golden Pages. And at that time, it was like £14,000 a year to have a full page ad, which was like the equivalent of $100,000 now, maybe. So being able to use the internet and to be able to have video and, you know, I remember we were like, I think one of the first, definitely one of the first music or entertainment companies that filmed. I remember going in and filming Cuban bands and rock and roll bands and getting those videos and working out how to put them on a website because there was no YouTube then, you know, so how that all evolved where we are now, you know, it just gave everybody a chance, which was great.
It's really interesting that because, you know, I think things here in the United States, like in the 1960s, a lot of bands, especially the ones coming over from England, were getting exposure by doing college tours, which doesn't happen as much anymore. But in those days, a lot of universities and colleges were booking these bands. And what you did 26 years ago is a kind of a progression of that. And, you know, it kind of is a way of solving the problem of how do you get exposed. And but what you're doing is giving an opportunity and having other people pay for it, for these bands to get exposure, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's an essential. It's like so important, you know, getting that groundwork to gig and to move around counties and cities. Like, if you look at how a band breaks nationally, especially in Ireland, I'm sure in America, it's probably similar in a lot of ways. You got to be able to break out of one or two of the major cities. You got to tour and, you know, you got to try and build up your radio. And by doing both of those things, it accelerates what you're trying to do huge time. And also, you know, I remember bringing two or three labels over to see a couple of acts. And at the time, the acts hadn't enough skills in front of people. And that's so important. And that's the thing that I worry about for the younger bands. At the moment, they haven't had that for the last few years. And it's so important. You know, you've got to be up in front of a stage. You know, if you're a rock band or whatever style of music you play, you need to have some kind of skill set with the microphone or engaging with your audience, you know, at some level. And you got to do that. And how you do that and how you learn that is by, you know, being on tour. You know, you can watch it. You can see it on the TV programs. Look at some of the new bands that are artists that break on TV. You know, they look like scarecrows standing on a stage. You know, they don't have that full-on interaction or ability to engage with audiences.
Right.
I think that's a massive part that you learn from the touring, you know, which you valuably need.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but, you know, if you're standing on America's Got Talent or Britain's Got Talent or whatever, they don't have what your bands or your groups are getting by touring and, you know, doing these gigs in front of a lot of people. There's a question I wanted to ask you. It goes back to something you said before. In the film business, we have independent film making started somewhere. I mean, it wasn't invented in the 70s, but it became popular with the directors and all in the 70s. And it was kind of a way to give the finger to the studios. Well, in the music business, you have the labels who have traditionally controlled everything. Do you feel that there's a similar thing in the music business to the independent film business that happened in our world, in the world of film? Does that exist in the world of, do musicians have those kind of alternatives today without labels, without the things? You were talking about that before. I wanted you to expound a little bit on that.
Yeah, I mean, like, the real thing is there used to be multiple income streams for all artists, right? You had your touring, you had your merch, you had your record sales, you had your music rights. And now that's whittled down to maybe two things. Merch, Spotify doesn't pay anybody, certainly doesn't support anybody. In the country, in Ireland at the moment, it's really hard even for, like, let's say national level artists to survive. They are barely surviving because the only money they make is either through their live gig and the bit of merch that they have.
All right.
So the thing about it is here is that there's, you know, the labels, don't really, there's nothing really strong, unfortunately, in Ireland at the moment on a very let's say, commercial or rock and roll level, which is really weird because if you look at how many bands and artists have come out, you know, Cranberries, U2, you know, even at a pop back, your Westlife, your Sinead O'Connor's, your Imelda Mays, and like, there's a lot of artists that are all at different, you know, your Chief, you know, you've got, you know, Damien Dempsey, you've got everything from trad, rock, punk, pop, cheese, you know, it's all there. The problem is with Irish bands, they don't get, I don't think, the proper label support. And it's a real pity because then they usually have to go to London or, you know, it's dictated by somebody so far away and then it's just forgotten about. It's really hard to survive at the moment unless you are, you know, gigging and pulling in serious numbers.
And your corporate gigs and all will pay, you're helping to support the music, essentially.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, well, the good thing is that got switched on this week now because obviously just with COVID, got it all left for the last 2 years. But, you know, like say for today, for example, I took 4 or 5 phone calls to do with, one of the bands was the Coronas. We took a corporate call for, you know, 2 or 3 of our other artists as well, you know, and he was asked for something. So, you know, then we also have a tribute Daft Punk act and, you know, they got booked for something in Denmark for 20 minutes. So
right.
There could be all kinds of things. And, you know, yeah, it all keeps everybody going, you know, and it's important to try and survive.
You even did something with fashion and music. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I had the pleasure quite a few years ago on Grafton Street. There was an open air gig. I mean, the Irish are great for supporting charities at any cost, you know. And we walked down Grafton Street one day, and then there was this big model stage show with Derek Daniels from the Assets Model Agency, and I was a friend of mine introduced me to him. Some of the Smith brothers that ran a lighting company just like back in the day, and then they were like, look, could you put some music together for these guys for the fashion show? So I ended up working for about 15 years scripting music with Derek and all the major kind of fashion events, was putting together all music styles for a lot of the top designers in Ireland and worldwide for kind of shows that would happen in all the kind of, you know, pre-launch events that would happen in the country. It was great fun, really interesting. And musically very interesting because you could use all different styles of music from hip-hop, funk, soul, dance, rock, you know, but being very theatrically to go with the clothes.
So as a send-up to that, we've got this clip called Release, the Afro-Celt Sound System.
Ah, with Sinead O'Connor, yeah. What a great tune.
Oh, I like that.
So, Mark, you've been booking bands for several years. How did all that come about? And how did you start working with artists like the Coronas, Paddy Casey, and Blind Boy, and people like that?
A lot of the new acts would send in some videos or their PR material. Watch out for just like, obviously keeping an eye on what's hot and what's moving. Yeah. Other the venues would contact me or you know, it's, you know yourself, in Ireland it's quite small, so word of mouth is massive still. We have a network of just people that we deal with, some really good promoters and good guys that we deal with from, have done for many years in each of the counties, north and south, you know.
Yeah, and so you DJing and you know, you were promoting your business and websites and stuff like that. But how did you end up working with people like the Coronas and Paddy Casey and Blind Boy? You know, how did they send stuff to you, or how did all that come about?
Yeah, great question, actually. This is a great question for anybody who's starting off in music. Never let an opportunity pass you. And sometimes in life, things can pass you really, really quickly and easily. But also sometimes you can go and grab something. It may not be right in front of you there that minute, but if you really, really want it, you can go and get it. And I think I think that's one thing we learn in Ireland, because, you know, because I think we live in a small island, you have to learn to go and fend for yourself and get things and seek outwardly all the time, because you're not in a big environment. So you got to be able to do the hustle. And I remember the first one was Paddy Casey, and I ended up getting a relationship with Paddy Casey, because first of all, basically, Paddy was signed to Paul McGuinness, who was the U2 manager at the time. He was huge, massive, massive star. Yeah, he's like, I was doing a lot of corporate bookings at the time. So I used to book Paddy for a lot of corporate events. And it was through there that led into a relationship when his manager was and booker wasn't able to carry forward. He was like, I said, well, look, why don't I go and book some shows for you? So that started that one. The Coronas, we started working with on their first tours. You know, there was a friend of mine was working basically in a shop and said, you got to listen to this band. And I had to listen. We ended up having a relationship. And, you know, we started off booking their first shows for $300 and $400.
I didn't realize they were there from the beginning, Mark. Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. And then, you know, a friend of mine back in the time, we had connected with Tina from Zildjian through another person I had worked with. She ended up getting me, I just got to hear this guy playing drums, he's brilliant, and then we ended up getting him a Zildjian deal, you know, and then the Coronas obviously went on to become a very famous band, and we kind of ended up doing the same thing with Walking on Cars, booked their first tours, they were willing to gig and book everywhere, they ended up getting a really big record deal, you know, again, they were being, you know, they were turning up and playing for $300 and $400, and they went on to you know, sign not a major record deal.
Yeah, wow.
Not anymore, yeah. But, not as they say, is rock and roll, you know. But I think Pat the singer is a great songwriter. I think you will definitely see more of him. He's a good guy, you know.
And what about Blind Boy then? How did that happen?
Blind Boy, Jason, as you know well, I've got a stupid sense of humor, like your good self. You know, we love to laugh at some things in life. You know, we grew up laughing on Monty Python, and you know, I still love, I have a donkey sense of humor. But sorry, I'm not really answering that in the correct format. Basically, there was a band, the Rubber Bandits were together, right? Backpedal on that one. There was the Rubber Bandits were doing shows, and I really wanted to work with them, so I ended up getting them loads of college gigs, and then we got them more gigs, and then I got them a few more gigs in the venues. They ended up splitting from their manager at the time, and they were like, look, why don't you look after some of our shows? We ended up in a relationship then, and at the time I was developing a music app with a colleague of mine, Fraser McAllister. He'd worked with U2 for about 15 years, and then he'd come off the tour. We were like talking about, well, how could we help bands and artists develop and you know, bring all their things into one place? So we developed a kind of a music app, and we tried to get funding for it. And through that, we ended up talking to the Rubber Bandits and trying to develop their fan base within this app. Anyway, they went forward to kind of, Blind Boy went out kind of then on his own to write a book and to set up his own podcast, which has now become a 1 million person a week listenership, which is huge.
Incredible. Incredible.
And he's a super, super guy to work with. And it's just through building. I mean, an amazing. And you know what? You know, we were talking about, you know, maybe politics and just like people who are a voice of a generation. He is, to me and to many people in Ireland right now, a voice of a generation. He speaks his mind, he tells the truth, and he calls it as it is. And that's why he's built up this massive relationship with his fans. And ultimately, that's kind of what I did with all the artists that we work with. We had a relationship where everything was very transparent, and we helped them. And, you know, everything I did was to try and help them in any good way, through promoting them online, you know, doing social media, doing a hustle, trying to develop the gigs and, you know, build and create tours, bring in sponsorship, get college gigs. And through that, you know, everybody survives and everybody makes a living.
Well, on the back of that, we have a clip of Dad's Best Friend from the Rubber Bandits.
Yeah.
From
the Boom.
2 soundtrack. If you can spin it, Milfredo.
Again, so I did that thing at the Holiday Inn. My wife sells cheese on the internet. I think think about our sister when we're intimate. Our family and friends, they don't like me anymore, cause I threatened all our brothers with an antique sword. I'm your last best friend.
I remember that from Trainspotting too.
Yeah. Why, yeah. So Mark, so we go from this to you and your wife, who's a computer programmer, getting into the world of NFTs. And a lot of people are hearing about NFTs. And I would bet that about 1% of them actually know what an NFT is. And so if you explain how you got into this and how you see this as a benefit to artists in the marketplace, I'm sure everybody wants to hear what you have to say about this.
Yeah, great. If we look at, okay, NFT, non-fungible token, what it is to me is what I see is it's an amazing chance for musicians, artists, poets, writers, photographers to come together and to take their visuals and their audios, click them together, provide a offering for people to keep, to hold, or to sell, or to move on. Just, it's a digital offering, and you know, everything right now is digital. We look at where Bitcoin is going and all the cryptocurrencies, you know, we look at, you know, the fiat monies is kind of dropping 15%. You know, people are going to move into crypto land. You can see it happening. Yeah. So I think what you're going to see is, you know, my darling wife, she's from Havana in Cuba, Tanya, and so basically what happened was when lockdown happened, we were talking about how what can we do to help the artists and people that we work with in the environment that we're looking at. And when we were talking, I was into looking at kind of studying cryptos and where things were going, because like, you know, fiat monies are dropping at 15% per year, you know, and inflation is high and things are costing a lot more. Like every day you're putting your hand in your pocket and, you know, less than coming out, right? So, there's a huge spin, what everyone's listening to them right now in the world is like all these huge figures and these massive numbers. Okay, that's cool. But also there's another side to it, which is like, I think it could be a sustainable income stream for artists to add to their merch and to their live. And NFT can be that other variable. And we got into it because I'm just particularly into art. When I was younger, I wanted to go to art college. I just was never good enough. But I love art and, I love paintings. So when we were talking, about it during lockdown, myself and Tanya spoke about it. We were talking about, well, look, there's some really amazing artists in Cuba and Latin artists. Why don't we go and see what's knocking around in Havana right now? You know, what are people drawing and doing pictures? Because, I had brought back some really cool paintings from when I was there. So we started knocking on some doors and her father, Herminio, went and had a chat with a couple of amazing artists. And we were like, look, would you express an interest in this? And then they were up for it. So we basically started having talks with, 10 or 12 really cool artists that we loved, that we liked. Said, look, why don't you come with us on this journey? We'll help promote your art. We'll help bring your art to another level. We'll help take your art to wherever marketplace it needs to go to. And, we'll try and help you sell it. We'll do it transparently. You'll be CC'd on everything, and do the whole thing so that you can have, again, another sustainable living. Because many of these artists, even in present day with their physical work, can't make a living. But now all of a sudden, you've got the chance to make money out of doing something digitally. You've got some recurring income that you could have. And you've also got a chance right now of maybe getting some extra dollar that you didn't think could be even possible, along with still selling your physical work. And maybe that art can work with a music artist. Like what happens if you take Patty Casey and put them together with a real surrealist artist like a Salvador Dali-esque type guy?
Wouldn't it be amazing if Patty Casey, went in the studio and recorded music with a famous actor that we didn't really know was a musician and did an NFT together? That could be magic, I think.
Mm. Oh, yeah. do you foresee a future
Sorry, Ruth.
Do you foresee a future where we're going to be going to NFT museums virtually?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's already happening.
It's already happening,
you,
right?
I think so. And I'll tell you why. About 4 years ago, I was in Spain, right? Yeah. And if you go to the art museums in Spain, when you're taken in on the in one or two of the ground levels and the lower floor levels of the museums, I don't know whether you'd agree with me on this, but in the ones I went to, they had all visuals in screens. And I remember at the time looking at it going, this is a bit mad, isn't it? But, you know, it was art, it was video. But it was just kind of like one or two clips moving at a couple of seconds, almost like a GIF. You'd see two or three clips and then we'd just come back and they were hanging it up as art on the wall. And essentially that's what it is. I think the future can be, you go into a famous, beautiful big hotel, or you go into like a Hard Rock Cafe or something, and you've got like, instead of like the art hanging on the wall, you've got like maybe 5 or 10 screens, and inside those screens you've got these wonderful pieces of art and maybe music. But this could be interchangeable. Imagine if you're going into your coffee, your favorite coffee place, and the next thing is, you know, you could be looking at maybe a whole load of, like, Chuck D from Public Image, you know, speaking his speak, giving you political messages, and you're like having your coffee, and you know, you go into a coffee house that's not a Starbucks, so they don't give a fuck. They're trying to make you politically aware or something. Or right. You go into a Four Seasons hotel, and it's got like some of the best Celtic classical music in the world, mixed with some real surrealist art. Or if you look at years ago, Brian Eno recorded an amazing album, which is a surrealist album, to do with audio sounds at a very, very microscopic level. So when you're walking through an airport, it was to soothe you. And like, you know, I think, you know, the future will be when you travel through in the airports, there'll be screens, beautiful imagery, instead of just a dirty poster with some crappy image on it. It'll be, everything will be rotating, so your senses visually and audio will be heightened. So, you know, and that's, I think, where NFTs are going to fit in. You know?
The opening scene of Minority Report, right?
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
I think you go to places like Dubai or Tokyo, you're almost already there, right?
I think
the interesting thing, you know, to come back to your initial question, could be like, you know, there could be book publishers. There could be, you know, you need a cover of a book. Well, you know, now it ain't that complicated. You buy the NFT, you get the music to go with, maybe a nice piece of imagery. It's done, you know. And I think that could be, so again, I'm just kind of coming from the agent or artist representative point of view, like how do you help the artist? And I think this could be what.
You know what's so cool about this, Mark, is what you're describing and what's happening. It's like, you know, I watch the disintegration of the music business through the digital age. We have figured out a way, because of the digital age, to actually bring back revenue streams in a much bigger, more healthier way.
Yeah.
It's actually incredible what we can do because of the blockchain.
Yeah.
You're doing a collection, a Cuban collection. Is that what you're launching with your first NFT round?
Yeah, we're going to be doing. We've got a connection from a number of different artists, which will be probably released in about 4 to 6 weeks, and we're really excited about it. We're super, super excited about it. There's some amazing photography. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting travel, you know.
And if any of our listeners, you know, are interested in wanting to contribute, you know, because we have content creators on both sides of the fence, you know, visual and audio. You know, are you open to receiving submissions? How can people? Because I just know through our Clubhouse conversations, NFT is like, oh, everyone's talking about it. Everybody wants to figure out how to get into it. We see all these new startups, you know, launching their ideas. But I'd love to be able to funnel our listeners to a safe place, to someone I know has credibility, that actually is, you know, real and doing what needs to be done on the creative and business. Or are you specifically handpicking, like you have a vision of the NFTs you want to do, or are you like open to submission?
Oh, Jay, first of all, I'm humbled. So thank you so much. Really appreciate that what you just said. Look, absolutely. You can check out NFTpioneers.io, AMARTA.ES. We have one company set up in Spain, in Seville. We'll have an office in Singapore. and there'll be an office in Ireland. The Irish office will be operating the NFTs, NFTpioneers.io. And then Spain, my wife Tania Alvarez Bazanova Downing will be running that side of things with AMARTE.ES, E for Emma and S for Spain. So we welcome anybody that wants to. We're basically going to cherry pick everything that we like. You know, it's like with the music, like what we did with the music, Jay. I always say you can only work with people who want to be represented. If people don't want to be represented, well, then fine, go do your thing. But if you do want to be represented and you do need a hand, you know, I think everybody's trying to scramble to either try and make something like a crypto punk or something like that. And everybody's trying to make a marketplace. Well, we're not trying to do that. What we're saying is, if you've got talent and you need a help develop that talent and bring it to somewhere where you can commercialize it and sell it, that's what we're good at. We got the expertise to help you sell that and generate some income. If you're good, we will make sure that gets sold and we will make sure you get what's due to you and hopefully expand that like we have with other artists where they started off at the beginning and they scaled it up right up to the top where, you know, they were making significant monies every year.
Well, what an opportunity. I know that we will share all those links on our social media and in our mailing list. So yeah, if you're listening, definitely check out our Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. We're on all the social media. And of course, if you're signed up to the mailing list at tsrsyncs@gmail.com, then you will also receive the information about Mark Downing and what he's doing with AMA Music Agency and NFTs and everything else. Incredible.
Fantastic. Well, absolutely brilliant. Listen, Mark, thank you so much for being on the show with us. This evening, it's been enlightening and it's been fantastic to listen to one, your story, but also to hear about the NFTs. And it's so important for the artists to be able to have control of their art.
What do you think, Colin? Maybe you should be dabbling in the NFT world.
Yeah, maybe I should be dabbling in the NFT world. Maybe I should. I'll see how that goes.
Hey, well, that's a cliffhanger.
Guys, thank you so much. I greatly appreciate you even giving me a chance to speak with you. Jason, I'm humbled that you'd even think about it. And, you know, if anybody needs a bit of help,
thank you, Mark.
Honestly, I love you. I love what you do. Our friendship, you know, was born on you just welcoming me into Ireland and connecting me, you know, from the Coronas to Patty Casey to Aslan. I mean, you've just been, and Moira Brennan, we didn't even talk about the most incredible Moira Brennan. I mean, your story goes way beyond the things we talked about today. And yeah, I think we thank you for spending your evening with us. Thank you, Mark.
I'm humbled, genuinely humbled. And thank you, guys. Mila, mila, mahagat.
Thank you, Mark.
Look, I am. Hey, guys.
Hey, Jace.
Hey, Jason. You okay?
Yeah, I'm good. Just buried in paperwork.
Oh, for the sync report.
Not this time. Move me no mountain.
That indie film you're music supervising?
Yeah.
Sounds like a great project. What's the problem?
It's a brilliant film, and we're building a great soundtrack, but you can't imagine how much paperwork I deal with for these films.
Have you heard of Sync Lodge?
First, you gotta draft up the sync request forms.
I've heard of Sync Lodge.
Then drafting and issuing contracts.
Yep, Sync Lodge is great, Paula. It does everything a music supervisor needs.
Then deliver the cue sheet. It never ends.
Doesn't Sync Lodge do all of that automatically?
Sweat Lodge? What are you guys banging on about? I got real issues I'm sharing with you guys.
Yeah, lots of issues.
We're trying to tell you, Jason. Sync Lodge is a new platform for music supervisors. It helps you to source the music, sync songs against scenes, draft up sync requests, and even creates the cue sheets once you've locked in the music to the film.
Whoa, Sync Lodge does all that?
It's true, Jason. I just started using it for the sync report, and it's not only saving time, but it's so easy to use, I'm actually enjoying the work.
You guys are the best. Sync Lodge sounds amazing and exactly what I need for music supervising. Why am I always the last one to hear about these things?
I've been telling you about Sync Lodge for weeks.
Don't feel bad, Edge, for not telling me sooner. I know you're busy. You're a good guy.
Paula, is my mic on? Can you hear me?
Loud and clear, Edge.
Guys, what's the name of that program again?
Sync Lodge.
That is something to scream about. Yes, you too can be cool like Edge and use cutting edge technology to help you with your film and TV productions. No matter if you're a music supervisor, director, producer, editor, save time and increase proficiency with Sync Lodge.
I need to find a new thing.
Sync opportunities, sync opportunities.
Let us tap in and say a quick warm welcome to Vinx. Hello, my gorgeous friend.
Hey, my peoples.
Are you home safe?
I miss you guys so bad. Like I'm a junkie, man. I want 2 weeks off. Come on, I want to just jam all of you up my nose right now. Glad you're back.
Oh, I have missed you, Vinx. Oh, my God. We have so many exciting things to share with you. We're actually going to do a Zoom and YouTube live element so we can be a little bit more immersive, a little more engaging, and, you know, so I can show off our Zavatar. You know, there's just nothing cooler than these avatars, and I can't get enough of all the compliments I get when I show people my Zavatar. Although Kevin's Zavatar is better than my Zavatar, but we won't talk about that at the moment. It's a sore point, and we will move
it's
on.
Apples and oranges.
I'm going to talk to Kevin Luss. Let me say hello. Actually, let's welcome Heather back to the stage. Heather, I'm so glad that you're here. Thank you for jumping in and helping us with the music department. How are you feeling today? Did you have a nice weekend?
I had a lovely weekend, but it's like 90 degrees in Montreal right now, and it's super humid, so it's intense, because if I laugh, I might suffocate. Like,
oh, God. It is that sticky, huh?
Yeah, like, it's intense.
Like Florida sticky. Don't make fun of Florida. Kevin will hate it. Well, I'm glad you're back. You're wonderful. And this, I'm so excited about what's going on. And Lisa's going to be a big part of what this whole new music department and what's happening on Sundays. Lisa Dunn, my constant lifesaver. The woman who picked out our selection for Kevin to hear tonight, and so much more. How are you doing, Lisa? How is your cat?
Well, my cat's at the vet right now. She's getting some testing done, but I think she's going to be coming home with some antibiotics. She's an old lady. She's 20.
21 years old. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. That is one loved cat. And I want to say hello to Jody. Hello, Jody Lynn. How's it going?
Everything is great. I agree with Heather, though. It is really, really hot out. And I didn't realize next week, Zoom, that means we got to wear makeup.
Yeah, that's the thing. You guys are all going to get your Zavatars soon. But until then, you got to do the hair, makeup, lighting, set design. Hello, Kevin Sharpley, award-winning filmmaker, marketing mastermind, futurist, god of the metaverse. How are you tonight?
Wow, that's a lot.
Why don't you give us a quick brief of this scene and the kind of music that you're looking for?
You know, the film is a noir. You know, it's a psychological thriller, but it's also a noir with, instead of one femme fatale, you have four femme fatales in varying degrees and layers. And so this particular scene is three of the femme fatales that help to supplement the plan that was hatched. Mm. And so it's the three of them, two of them on one side, plotting to bring in even further into this sullied tale. So you have two that are more informed about what's going on, although they are not fully informed about the plan. And then you have the other young lady that is already part of the plan, but they want to sucker in even more.
All right. So do you have any, like, is there any music reference that you
So in the brief, it says, you want to think, deep cello, the bass line. So you want to think noirs. So any noir that you've seen, the music is intense. It is an intense scene. You'll want to think, violins that come in to punctuate what the other two, that are sucking her in, to punctuate what they're bringing to the table. And, I'm definitely open to playing against the scene. It could potentially even be, a song that plays against the grain.
amazing new minds that I've been able to connect with lately that are actually going to come start coming in every Sunday and giving us like what's hot, what's not in the metaverse and Web3. So with no further ado, I would like to introduce you and welcome my friends, Tyler and Dan. How are you guys doing?
Dan, you want to go first? But I'm doing fantastic, guys. I really appreciate, you know, the platform, and it's just been so fun to watch how quickly you guys are catching fire. And I know you've been working behind the scenes a long time with the Sync Report, but from the Zataverse side and everything you guys are looking to come to market with here very shortly, just super fun to be able to be a part of it. You know, very, very honored.
Well, it was so great connecting with you, Tyler. We had this really amazing experience on Twitter Live or Twitter Speaks or whatever Twitter is. Actually, I got Tyler into the screening. Did I tell you, Kevin, we screened Movie No Mountain on Friday.
Yeah, the film festival. Yeah, I knew that screening was coming up.
And Tyler, I know we got you into that screening. So I guess tonight we're going to, you know, instead of focusing so much on Metaverse and Web3, I think you're going to give us a little bit of a movie kind of review and some ways that film can be used within the NFT world, which is very exciting.
Yeah, man. I mean, again, to echo what Rachel just said, just a fantastic job you guys did. And, you know, it was funny. We were on the call, right? We were catching up from our previous meeting and just doing a follow-up. And I re-mentioned that I was in Vegas. And he's like, I premiered a film there today. Let me see if I can get you in. And within, you know, 30 minutes, I was on the list and had like 2 hours to get ready and fly downtown. But he failed to mention to me, not only was it premiering in Vegas, but it was completely and entirely shot in my hometown. And I'm born and raised here 30 years. And wow, just such a powerful movie, right? And, you know, I just wrote something down when you were actually speaking to the budget that kind of really overlays with some of the stuff I wanted to talk about, right? For such a high caliber quality team and then impact, like social use case, why only 100K budget, man? Like, was there, was that like where you guys set to raise it to? Or
so I'm gonna tell
struggles
you, this
with
the,
that amount of money?
This is the sad state of affairs for indie filmmakers, yes. You know? To get support, especially, and, you know, I hate to say this, but it's the facts. If you're a woman, if you are, you know, if you're basically anything but white, you know, it's like a white male, you know, raising funds for film is like, it's the hardest thing in the world to do. So even raising 100,000 is monumental, but not nearly enough to make, well, actually I'm wrong. It was
Absolutely. And I'm sure throwing the social impact rather than a flashy kind of, you know, thriller drama, whatever it may be, having that association actually probably hurts the cap raise as well, when really it should bolster it and, you know, bring light to some of these things that are going on, especially a lot of the themes touched on in the movie, man, because, you know, mental health and homelessness and just all the things that occurred in that movie, man. It was just like I was telling you in our DMs, like, I have a personal story testimonially, either that affected me or somebody that I care deeply for. I've lost people in my life that I care about to some of those things. And it was just, you know, profound. But through the entirety of it, right, the time I spent and how I apply my talent in Web3 is as a macro generalist, right? So I understand NFT tech, metaverse, Web3, you know, economic models, and then apply them to every industry and kind of serve as a bridge across kind of helping to showcase where these new ideals and methodologies allow for, you know, innovation and disruption to help bring creation and provenance back to the individuals that are doing it, but then also engaging fan bases and just doing things that have never really been done before to help bolster, you know, specific use cases just like this, right? So being able to, like, per se, raise directly with the fan base that, you know, is going to be watching the film, and then have them be able to, you know, share in royalties and, you know, things like that. It's just so many amazing opportunities to be able to do and circumnavigate these kind of broken processes.
I just saw there's some guy out there that, you know, I just started following. He has a film, $30 million budget. He's going to raise completely through NFT sales and through the blockchain. I mean, it's just, it seems like an outrageous goal, but if he can do that, how amazing.
Well, so here's the thing too, right? So that flyer I sent you for the Twitter space that's coming up with my friends, those are three use cases that are engaged currently, right? One of which I actually worked with in the early phases to kind of help lay some architecture and ideas with which chain implementations and potential use cases for IP and how to integrate it on the blockchain and things like that. But it's being done. It's just not being talked about because it hasn't happened end to end with a public facing lens yet, but it's happening in a lot of different lanes. It really comes down to having correct tenured people like Dan, myself, that have access to the experts at hand to ensure that capital is being deployed correctly for the use case at hand, and then aligning it with the demographic so that it's seamless for the participation to be able to receive the rewards that are at hand, you know, that rather than having to focus on the technical, hard skilled kind of things to apply yourself, making it easy for users to both obtain and then receive, you know, the rewards that come in these models.
I mean, it's such an exciting, exciting place to be right now. I mean, especially for if you're a content creator. You know, it's funny how the digital age just annihilated the music industry and then has been starting to chomp away at the film and TV industries. But yet now it's come back with like the ultimate solution. And I just hope we can, you know, kind of educate people on the positive sides of, you know, Web3 and the metaverse and these NFTs, because it's such a, you know, it's a hot topic. It really great. Great, great, great. Oh, I love it. All right. So what we're going to do is we're going to say a hello to Lionel Lodge now. I connected with Lionel recently because I found out about something called the Sync Lodge, a tool that we are now using for Move Me No Mountain and for the Sync Report. It is absolutely incredible what this platform does if you're a music supervisor, if you're a director or editor, to be able to sync music to scene that automatically creates cue sheets, helps you draft up the contracts, helps you just on every level of what is needed as a music soup. But we're not going to talk about like what, you know, all the tricks and bells and whistles of Sync Lodge. I want to know why and how somebody came up with this idea. And the more I kind of dove into Lionel's background, it does make a lot of sense. So Lionel, hello, how are you today first?
Hey, Jason. hey, wonderful to be here. What a great group you guys have. Like this is so entertaining and so positive. I'm enjoying listening so much.
Thank you. Isn't it a great group of people? I mean, this is...
Very positive and informative. Lots of great ideas. This whole NFT thing is also something I'm learning and trying to keep on the cusp of the wave of, but yeah, exciting.
Oh, it's so exciting. And this is just like Sync Lodge, you know, these NFTs, there's just, you know, technology is actually, you know, got to a point where, you know, content creators can, you know, enjoy this experience and not be stressing, you know, when you can actually upload a scene, upload a song, see if it works, replace it with another song, look through a search engine that gives you references that's in that, you know, BPM or genre. I mean, what you've created is amazing. And it made me wonder, it was like, who is this guy, you know? And and so what I'm learning is actually, it's kind of almost second generation. Like your dad was kind of a hot shot too, wasn't he? You know, he started off pirate radio, Radio Caroline, like one of the most famous of the pirate radio stations. He's interviewed the Beatles. He's emceed for the Rolling Stones and like a plethora of others. I mean, what was that like growing up in that kind of atmosphere?
Well, it's a funny thing because it was just normal to me, right? Like I went to the world premiere of the movie Help by the Beatles, and I was, you know, 4 years old or something like that. And there was the Kinks, there was the Animals, there was the Beatles, the Rolling Stones. I knew who all of them were. Right. And it took me like about
you did not eight, just 10 know years. The music, you knew who they were.
I knew who they were. You like knew my them. Dad yeah. would say, he'd go off and say, okay, tonight I'm emceeing for the Rolling Stones, or he'd be traveling with the Who. Right. He traveled around a bit with the Who and stuff. And so it took me about 8 or 10 years to realize not everybody's life was like that. I thought, you know, as a kid, you just think that what your environment is normal. Right? So it took me quite a while to realize, okay, that was kind of unique.
Lionel, I'm going to have you back. And I think I'm going to do a whole segment with you because this is just so cool. Interesting to me. But I think what's going to be kind of exciting for the audience tonight is you're building a library. So basically, as you're inside the program and you know, I'm a director, I'm a music supervisor, I know kind of what I'm looking for, and you type in keywords and music comes up as suggestions. So you're out there, you're talking to labels and publishers, you're talking to songwriters. How can my audience, how can the Sync Report audience submit music to you that you could consider for the Sync Lodge?
Okay, so one of the things about Sync Lodge is we do not store catalogs. We access them. So the key is to have your music registered properly with your PRO, with your CMO, with things like the MLC, the Mechanical License Collective in the States, right? To have your music properly registered, and also if you have it on streaming platforms, right, audio streaming platforms, then we access it.
So if it's on SoundCloud or Spotify,
yeah, Apple Music, any of those, right? The music supervisors can search for it and access it. So the idea is, we don't want to be another workload for you. We don't want to be another place where, okay, now I'm releasing something. Now I've put it out here and there. Now I've got to go into Sync Lodge and put in all the information, right? When you, as a copyright holder or administrator, you register with us, you tell us who you are and where your catalog is registered, and then we access it. And once we authorize your account, you can click on the catalog button and you will see your full catalog as it's registered. So you don't have to put in any of that information in. And when you update it with your PRO, then it just automatically gets updated on our side.
So it's so amazing what you have created. Absolutely exciting. Made my job easier because, as you were saying, you know, as a music supervisor, you know, 90% of what we do is paperwork. So like even collecting the metadata, you know, if not everyone's on Disco, not everyone really even understands what that means. But, you know, your program is just, it's a godsend for the industry. And
Cool. That's so great to hear.
I want to echo that too, man. I don't mean to cut you off, Jason, but Lionel, hats off to you, man. Like those type of collaborative, integrative platforms that you built that don't look to try to set yourself up as a Web3 decentralized winner, but a Web 2.5 platform bridge to help facilitate value transfer via this tech, man. That's what's going to win long term. So hats off to what you put yourself to innovate out there, man.
Nice. Well, as a copyright holder, I just thought there has to be an easy way of doing this, right? There has to be some way. Okay, our development team didn't think it was easy. they had the big work.
Well, you did. I mean, you created it. I mean, it is everyone, you know, from my engineers to my audio editing team, you know, even to the sync team I'm working with for Movie No Mountain. Everybody was like, oh my God, this is just amazing. And yeah, you know, you got to get a new program. You got to get used to it. But once you do, wow, the time it saves is so worth it. It's just absolutely incredible.
Yeah, we've had music supervisors tell us we're saving them a day and a half a week.
Oh, easily. That
is so cool. And the other thing about it is we're very open to people telling us what we're missing. Right. We're very open to other people in the industry saying, if it also did this, that would be great. Right. This is something we're listening to.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, it's an honor for us to be, you know, you're well beyond beta, man. But for us to be, you know, testing the waters out and, you know, you being open to some ideas, that is so exciting. But from my perspective, you've nailed it. You've just come up with something so valuable to the industry. I see this, like, you know, cool, spreading like a rash, my friend.
Cool. Thank you.
Spreading like
Thank
Corona.
It's been a long road, right? And you know, it's something where this is my life right now. You know, as a musician, for the last 3 years, I've been working on my next album, and it's really taken the back seat. And my guitar complains to me. when are you going to touch me and play me again? Right? It's my passion of my life.
Your guitar is right? Gently weeping.
Yes, yes. It's sitting next to me here. I'm in my studio right now. It's going, you know, when you finish talking, at least maybe you'll play me a bit.
Yeah. Oh, pick her up. Give her some love. And she will be so proud of you because we are proud of you. We are honored that you're part of our community and thankful for allowing us to use your platform.
And, hey, it's a pleasure.
I'm going to have a conversation with Paula and Kevin and figure out how to get you back on so we could do a bigger segment. But now let's take a left turn. Let's get into the music. Paula, should we play some music?
Let's do it.
Should we make sure Kevin and Vinks and Milfredo aren't asleep at the wheel?
I'm here.
All right. You ready for your music?
Always ready.
All right. Paula, who's first up?
So first up, we have Joshua Bonnet with And We Meet Again.
Ooh.
Spin it, Milfredo.
Wow, Joshua, how cool. Welcome to the stage. Very score, very, you know, it's funny because, you know, having Dan and Tyler on stage, you know, I'm just like full of like, you know, metaverse gaming. And I could definitely hear that in a game. Why don't you give us a little introduction? Tell us about the track.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Appreciate the opportunity to check out my song. I got the email for the brief, and so it was something that is a little different for me because, like, than what I would normally do. But I, you know, I like challenges, and that's what I did with this one. I was like, I'm gonna try to create something that could fit this brief, and this is what the end result was.
Milfredo, if you'd like to weigh in, or
yeah, dramatic. I mean, it got my attention straight away, and just I'm a sucker for those squeaky clean 80s synths as well. It's just like, but I mean, Kevin mentioned Blade Runner earlier. I mean, that has definitely got a touch of Evangelis about it, hasn't it? Do you know what I mean? It's it sounds like someone classically trained done it. I don't know whether you are Joshua or not. I don't know. Are you classically trained, or is that just your feel?
No, I'm not classically trained.
I would have
guessed that too, Milfredo. Yeah, I totally caught that.
Yeah. I did do choral music in high school. So, I mean, I guess I got a little bit of that.
But. Yeah, yeah. But no, that's testament to you then, man, for sure. And the thing is, You know, and I always moan about when there's too much going on. There is a lot going on in there, but it's all the right things going on. And I do notice that, you know, is it still had room to breathe because you dropped stuff out when something came in, you know, and got activated. And, you know, there was no crescendo, but it just kept me on it, you know. And there's that Dominator 90s rave synth in there as well, but it doesn't take over. It's not too aggressive. The level on it is just dropped down. It just says drama. It kept me watching whatever scene it is. So well done, mate. Yeah, good job.
Before we go to Vinx, Joshua, where are you from?
I'm originally from Phoenix, Arizona. I currently live in Texas right now, in Amarillo, Texas.
Oh, you love all the hot spots. Literally. Yeah. Very fucking hot. Excellent. Vinx, what'd you think of that track from Joshua?
Okay, I was hearing conclusion, summary. I like it. This get you in the zone, like we just accomplished something and we're not quite sure what it is unless we watched it. And like you said, there was no crescendo, but it didn't need to. It was that place that we hold hold us at this moment of processing what we just watched. It was a good place for that. I was dreaming of you using taiko drums, like giant Japanese drums with the big sticks on the rims. Just to give you some reality to go with the synths. But I loved it. The concept, you know, and the counter melodies, everything was great.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. All right, Paula, let us know who is next that submitted properly. And I'm sure they put in their subject matter, we love Kevin Sharpley.
Well, almost. They've called their track Deadly Night Out by Lance Fleming. Spin it, Wilfredo.
All right, Kevin, you're the man tonight. Tell us what you thought of that track.
Man, when that track came on, so Michael Mann is one of my favorite directors.
Oh, yeah.
And so and when that track first came on, I immediately went to Michael Mann, Miami Vice, you know, Milfredo said the 80s. But that 80s stuff is what's popping right now. I mean, if anyone that watches Stranger Things, I mean, half the songs, if not more.
Oh, my God. Look at what happened for Kate Bush. Number one. Unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. From what I understand, she's making $250,000 to $500,000 a week off of that song.
God bless her.
Yeah, absolutely. But when you make an indelible track that stands the test of time, then that's what you get. And so this song transcends time, so time and space. So, you know, I can kind of put it there. But also what I was thinking about, and this is for the content creators, the filmmakers, and you know, the people that are out there shooting, and something I teach my students, which is when you do a scene, you want to make sure you get enough coverage. Because when you get into the editing, and you get into the editing room, and you need to cut to something else, if you don't have enough coverage, then you're going to be stuck. Or oftentimes you're stuck with what you have and trying to make that work. And so what's really incredible about the submissions that have come in so far, and I said this before, is that they're all distinctly different. And what that does for me is I can go into the editing room and parry that song and the pacing of the scene, how the scene plays out over that whatever 3 minutes or 4 minutes or 5 minutes that it's on the screen with the emotion that's in the scene. Bigger, you compare it and you pair it with the scene that's before it and the scene that's after it. And, you know, it's this dance, a poetic dance that you're doing with the film where you're having a pull and tug, especially when you have a film like a psychological thriller and, you know, a film that's like a drama. You want to pull and tug on people's emotions. And what this song does, which is distinctly different than anything else that has come through, is it allows me a way to change the pacing of the scene. You know, the beats per minute, definitely faster than anything that's come up so far. You know, if I want to take the scene and give it an intensity through the pacing and the cutting, this is the song that I'm going to use. So maybe I just gave too much, you know, but another great job.
Incredible.
Another great job that goes in the A column. Again, something else that's going to be more work for me, but it's good work. So
I love it. I love this room. I love what we're doing for indie filmmakers here. Yeah, let's, you know, let's make this man's job more difficult by choking him with incredible music. I love it. I love it. I love it. All right. Okay. So I think the most exciting part of the show is actually on the fly, listening to submissions from people in the room. Paula, are we going to do that now? Is that what's happening next?
This person is a really big supporter of us on social media, and we're super grateful for that.
And he's here every Sunday.
He's here every Sunday. So
he's a tremendous fucking songwriter.
Well, there is that too, which is also quite an important point to make. So let's spin Midas Royal, The Journey.
Yay!
Thank you.
So this is emotional for me, actually, I have to say. Sorry, Lisa. I think we have a new chameleon. I've never, you know, it's very rare that you can come across an artist that can produce content at a certain caliber in so many different genres and so many different emotions. I'm blown away, Midas. I was not expecting that, and very different from your normal bag of tricks. Man, yeah, take the mic from me because I'm a little choked up. Tell me about the song and where this came from.
Wow, man. First of all, thank you so much, Jason. This is my favorite Sunday afternoon, so I'm glad you guys are back. The truth of the matter is, when I work on these songs, I work with others and I collaborate. So this song was written with one of my main collaborators, Craig Sayer, who was in the audience a little bit earlier. And what Craig and I do is we really find something that's got a vibe to it. And if it's a vibe that speaks to both of us, then we just, you know, set the ship sail, you know? So for this one, I'm a big fan of Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. So it reminded me of wanting to do some soundtrack type music. It wasn't necessarily written for Kevin's brief, but it came from a really emotional place within me, which is what happens if you're involved in the songwriting, you're really putting your efforts in, you get emotionally involved in the track. And that's what happened here. So Craig created this incredible ambient bed. And then we just started, you know, vibing off the track, and it just all came together like very quickly. But thank you so much, as always. I just love the Sync Report. And
incredible. Midas, I mean, it's very rare that you get an artist that's just, and again, your backstory is like crazy, because I know you've only really been focusing on your craft, you know, professionally the last year or two, which is just astounding, and kind of blows my mind anyways. I'm hogging up all the Midas time. I'm gonna put you in the hot seat now, Midas. Now, you know, the rest of the guys, they might not love you as much as I do. So let's see. Milfredo, can you talk? Can you badmouth that track?
Yeah, that was a load of shit.
Thank you.
No. Oh, man. Do you know, those pianos come in, it's just like, oh, I don't know, like My Chemical Romance start or something. It was that anthemic. And then, I mean, and like, you know, Midas, man, they were talking about earlier, reading up on the gen for this, for what was needed. And it was just like textbook, you know what I mean? It's noir with a capital new, I think. And, you know, it was deep, it had meaning, it was emotional. And yeah, and I'm thinking, oh, what a tune this is. And then it goes next level with a vocal. Do you know what I mean? It was just like, it was good enough up to that point. And then it was just like, oh, God, there's another level to this. So, I mean,
it could done it in such a way that for a film, it's perfect, you know?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And I mean, didn't the Twin Peaks writer die a couple of weeks ago? Well, I think she just got reincarnated. It was just like, you know, it was that big, that, you know, that epic kind of theme tune. It was just like, and I don't know, every sound was perfect addition, you know. It didn't crash into the next sound. It was just I feel like a fake among genii or genius today. So well done, mate, for making me feel that way. But if you could just fuck off to another show when I'm on this one in the future, that would be really appreciated. All right, but man, that was amazing.
Thank you to the incredibly talented Mark Downing for joining us on today's show, and to you, our listeners, for spending your time with us. The Sync Report cast will be back in a week with your hosts Rose Ganguza and Jason P. Rothberg and myself, Colin O'Donoghue. Until next time, take care and be kind.
Thank you for listening. Tune in next week.
Today's episode was produced by Jason P. Rothberg, Kevin Sharpley, Paula Flack, and Robert Capadonna. It was written by Jason P. Rothberg, Kevin Sharpley, Lisa Dunn, and Paula Flack. Editing was by Jason P. Rothberg, Milfredo Seven, Paula Flack, Edgar Edge Kameh, and Adam McNamara. Research by Lisa Dunn. Graphic design by Jody Lynn Talevi. Brought to you by Zavatar.